This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
Interesting conversation we're going to have right now for our In the Know segment with Margaret Weldon. A lot of Canadian senior citizens who are members of the LGBTQ community have fears about staying in hospitals and long-term health facilities. And Margaret and her guest from Rainbow Health Ontario are here actually to explain some of these fears and what efforts are being made to decrease these fears within the LGBTQ community. Margaret, do you want to introduce us to your guest, Devin Numbier?
Good afternoon, Ramya and Kelly. And today I would like to introduce Devin Numbier from Rainbow Health Ontario. That's just as Ramya said. Devin, we're so delighted to have you today. Maybe you could start out by telling us just a bit about yourself, maybe the role that you play in Rainbow Health Ontario, and let's go from there.
Great. So my name is David Numbier. I'm a Grandmaster of Science in Integrated Healthcare and a Graduate Diploma in Addictions Counseling. I deliver most of Rainbow Health Ontario's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, two-spirit, queer cultural competency training and education in my professional capacity, and that includes we do training in medical schools, we do training for nurse practitioners, registered nurses, social workers, and psychologists. And I've worked around in the LGBTQ sector for around 20 years, starting from the early 80s AIDS epidemic. And then I've worked in HIV sector treatment issues for around 10 to 12 years. And then I do some international work in LGBTQ health issue also.
My goodness, you've
lots
had
of experience.
Yeah, really. Devin, we understand that the senior citizens, as Ramya just said, of the LGBTQ community, have some fears about staying in hospitals or even long-term care facilities. Can you explain what those fears are and why they have them?
I think in order to explore some of the fears, we have to look a bit at the social and historical context of how sexual orientation and gender identity has been basically a stigmatized population, right? So if you look historically in terms of the Diagnostic and Statistics Manual, where being gay, being bisexual and transgender was seen as a mental illness, and then there's a criminal code in Canada that we had that until 1969. So historically, when people have experienced high levels of discrimination, state-sanctioned homo, bi, transphobia, for example, last year, Justin Trudeau did a national apology on November 28th, to recognize in terms of the horrific gay purge that took place from 1950s to 1990s on a federal level, affecting approximately 9,000 individuals who would be the 9,000 seniors getting access to healthcare. So people have undergone a lot of traumatic incidences and life-changing horrific experiences. So for many seniors, going to a healthcare center, whether it's a long-term facility, a residence, or going to see a physician, is also the fear of the closet of being, you know, what kind of homophobic treatment or transphobic statements are they going to get? What kind of assumptions are going to be made about them by going into those healthcare centers? Because LGBTQ has been seen as sort of medical pathology, right? So people are fearful of that. For a lot of trans people, they're fearful of being misgendered, handled insensitively, being treated differently or with disdain by caregivers who are LGBTQ positive. Also, for most of us in our twilight years, we're also more vulnerable to abuse and to have less power and privilege to advocate sometimes for ourselves. Also, sometimes we feel that our relationships will not be recognized and we're not having the option of having chosen families versus biological families. Because many of the seniors have been disowned by their biological families. Right. So people have created basically chosen families, a group of people that they feel emotionally close to. Also, sometimes will other residents and families discriminate them? Will there be name-calling? Will there be verbal assault, violence? Can I register in the intake form my same-sex partner? Or will I obviously have to choose the husband and wife? What are the options do I have?
Wow, and that sounds on so many levels.
There's so many intersections of issues. And then for those seniors who happen to be HIV positive, the issue of legal disclosure, shame, stigma, and there's been some horrific news that has come up in the past couple of years of individuals who are HIV positive. And then for some transgender individuals who are on hormone replacement therapy, will the healthcare center continue giving them the therapy or will they be stopping that, right?
Yeah.
Or will they also be assuming that all trans people are gay, lesbian, or bisexual? Because you can be transgender, which is about gender identity, and you also can be heterosexual, which is about sexual orientation. And then so also for many trans people, getting a lot of personal care in terms of, you know, addressing healthcare issues, if the anatomy does not align with the gender expression, will healthcare providers be sensitive to that issue? So it's a myriad of issues.
Yeah, that's right? A lot of questions to put out there. And really, you know, one would say, well, don't the healthcare professionals want these answers, want to know? And I always fear that confusion is so easy for them to have happen. And our own personal attitudes as people, unfortunately, comes into play instead of let's treat people as human beings, period.
You have some unique training programs for healthcare professionals, Devin. Perhaps you could discuss, you know, exactly what these training programs are and who your particular organization provides them for.
So Rainbow Health Ontario is funded by the Ministry of Health, right? Our particular organization we target is healthcare providers and social service providers. So hence, our trainings are culturally competent. We do offer clinical competency courses, clinical competency, cultural humility, cultural safety. We have around 12 trainings, and one of them is specifically targeted for LGBTQ seniors and healthcare needs. So I have been doing some trainings for that specific population through Alzheimer organizations, long-term care facilities, any organization that provides senior services. So we do have a whole range. We have basically introduction to LGBTQ, we have mental emotional health, we have removing the barriers, which is basically a review of policies, images, website images, what are your program services offer. Then we have a whole range of other trans clinical services for in transition in the workplace, trans and gender diverse primary care, transition-related surgeries, counseling, advocacy, and mental health support. What do counselors need to know about hormone therapy, supporting gender independent children?
Excellent.
So these are also catered to a variety of communities.
Clinicians. Yeah. Exactly.
Wow. And now, you just listed off like some of the topics that are covered. How is the training done? Is it done via role play? Is it done via writing things out? You know, is it offered at your home or at a client's or at a workplace or does some or do the people taking the training have to go to a facility of, you know, where you've chosen? How does all that come down?
You can either fill out a training form. So whichever way you want to have the training, we need the organization. Usually we do not do individual training, right, because we need a minimum of 10 people. So ideally it's an organization that we work through. Mm-hmm. We can also have what we call an open training where we choose a location, a city, a site, and then we have a training there, and then we send out it through Eventbrite and get people to register. So it's many ways. So right now we actually have an incredible amount of trainings for this year anyway.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a good thing. I mean, it's also slow learning because most of this sexual and gender orientation is not always taught in professional schools. So it's a steep learning curve for many professionals in terms of how they integrate this into their practice.
And that acceptance. Now, how, when putting all of these areas, as you listed off, that are covered with the training, talk a little, just briefly, the input that you must have had must have been incredible, real project, and people who all the partnerships, like Ramya said, that stepped forward and said, you know, well, we feel, or this is where we've been, and balancing all that out, that must have been a trick.
It is, and I think it's really important because I think most of the service providers who do approaches are also understand the need to learn this stuff, right? So it's not that, and it's hard, it's easier to sell the topic when you know you want to learn it versus saying you have to do this.
Yes.
And then there's resistance. Also, most of the clinical providers are also looking at equity lens, and the Ministry of Health also is looking at equity lens. So from an equity lens, we look basically, LGBTQ is a population health, right? So how do we provide care to a marginalized population? And so you could have many different population health, newcomers, seniors, and then you have intersectional identity. If you're senior, any LGBTQ, if you're senior and you're trans, right? What are the clinical needs you have? What are the cultural competencies? So far we haven't had much resistance from anyone because people do realize we don't know this. We need to learn this. We want to do a good job.
Which is really, I don't want to say ironic, but it's such a contrast because you have all these fears from the LGBTQ community, and then you have the people from the service provider lens that want to learn these things, right? Want to take part in the trainings and know that there's a community out there that needs their support. It's interesting.
It is, isn't it? Hey? Devin, how is this, as you say, like it is positive, but you also have other organizations that you work with as well. What are those organizations and what sort of programs do they provide?
In terms of organizations that we work to provide training to or how we...
Both. Like you've got organizations on there that look at family support.
Yes.
You've got organizations that look at training. You've got youth organizations, all kinds of things. Can you tell us about some of those organizations and just maybe a little bit about their services and how they differ from, let's say, what your organization provides in terms of training?
So most organizations do offer different trainings, but ours is strictly specific to LGBTQ health issues, right? So we do trainings with community health centers, family health teams, hospitals, child and youth child and youth mental health organizations, addiction services, Alzheimer's, long-term care. So when we go in, we say, you're already doing the work, but have you thought about now if your client happens to be lesbian, gay, bisexual, how do you do this different? What do you need to know? What do you need to learn? So that's what we're providing in terms of specific skill set.
Wow. It gives you a lot to think about, right?
Yes. And ultimately, we shouldn't assume anything about anyone.
No. Mm-hmm.
It makes it easier.
Now, do you find that these training programs that you offer, do you find that it's decreased some of the fear in terms of the seniors who are afraid to go into these long-term care homes, or is it too soon to tell? You know, and what sort of feedback do you get from those that you've provided training to?
We don't work directly with the clients, so we get feedback from the organization, because one of the things we do is that we help them in terms of actually reviewing the intake form.
Right.
So right away, I tell people, if you actually put the obvious information ahead of time, if you give people the choice to identify who your partners are, you're creating sort of an open system in terms of people to know this is a more of a safer space, I can tell whatever
right.
I need to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if you don't do that, then you're also creating many barriers. So sometimes we get calls or emails from organizations on certain issues and challenges and how to problem solve. Some organizations have made the changes to language, images, and website intake forms. So we can infer a positive experience will most likely be for the LGBTQ seniors. But also we have organizations call and say, we did a mistake and how can we fix this?
Mm.
Right? So there is a learning need and empathy and understanding.
Well, and it's hard because you want the community too that you're trying to assist, trying to allay the fears that they have, to know about it, to speak about it, to give that confidence and support to others in the situation that they know you're going into a home, and how do we make you feel more secure? Because for so many people, just going into a nursing home is, oh, I don't want to do that. You know, we all have our other issues that come before anything else. I know as a disabled person, I worry about access. Will I be what? So I can just imagine, and that's a lot of your work too.
Yeah.
So you're always not telling people not to make an assumption if someone is disabled, whether intellectual or physical, not to assume that they don't have a sexual orientation or gender identity.
Yes.
Right. Now, Devin, if you yourself had a piece of advice to offer any listeners today that might be listening who may be senior LGBTQ community member, or even somebody that is thinking about taking the training, what would that be?
So for LGBTQ seniors, what I would say is, as I'm nearing that age range, if you're comfortable being out, be proud of who you are, know what the laws, how the laws protect you, know the Ontario Human Rights Code. But also, if you're going to go into any long-term care facility, ask for respectful services. But not everybody wants to be out also. People will make their personal decision if I want to be out or not. Right. If that's the case where you don't want to be out, then make an informed decision on the options available where you are checking into, so to speak, to seek support services that are confidential and affirming for you. For family members who may have LGBTQ seniors, I think it's important to validate and affirm the senior's sense of identity and their lived experiences. Beware also of some of the challenges the individual may have gone through in terms of, providing more empathy and compassion, because I think respect, empathy, compassion, dignity goes a long way in building relationships.
That makes sense. Devin, we're running out of time here. Where can people go to learn more about the things we've talked about, or just to learn about your organization and programs and things like that?
So come to the website, www.rainbowhealthontario.ca. We have lots of resources, databases, provider services. Anything you cannot find, email one of us. We'll get back in touch with you.
Perfect.
Thank you very much for joining us today. This has been very informative, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you so much for having our show on the show.
Thank you.
That was Margaret Weldon and her guest Devin Numbier from Rainbow Health Ontario talking about their services for LGBTQ senior Canadians who are facing fears going into long-term health facilities or hospitals.
You've been listening to Kelly & Company. Make sure to subscribe to Kelly & Company wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a rating and review.